Day 411, Thursday, May 16th, Ecclesiastes 10, Part 1 of 2, Ecclesiastes 10 1-20 NKJV Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment, and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, as an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, while the rich sit in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses, while princes walk on the ground like servants. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. If the axe is dull, and one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength, but wisdom brings success. A serpent may bite when it is not charmed, the babbler is no different. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. A fool also multiplies words. No man knows what is to be, who can tell him what will be after him? The labor of fools wearies them, for they do not even know how to go to the city. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles, and your princes feast at the proper time, for strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness the building decays, and through idleness of hands the house leaks. A feast is made for laughter, and wine makes merry. But money answers everything. Do not curse the king, even in your thought. Do not curse the rich, even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter. Daily Deep Dive, the UCG Reading Plan states, we need wisdom to help navigate the problems of this life. Ecclesiastes 10:2 says, a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Where the heart is refers to what it is concerned with, whether things on the right or the left. Some versions have the heart inclining to either of these sides, NIV, ESV, and of course whichever way our heart leans is the way we will go. What is meant by right and left? Some see here a proclivity of the wise to value and choose right over wrong and the fool to be drawn to wrong over right, as in the God's Word translation. However, the contrast between right and left is not necessarily that between good and evil. The NIV Cultural Backgrounds Bible explains, while there is no doubt that the right side was considered the place of honor and the most protected position, there is no indication that there was something negative or inherently weak or evil connected to the left side, either in the ancient Near East or Israel. It was secondary in honor and an unexpected direction from which to attack. The fool chose the path of vulnerability and lower status. Note on verse 2, Kaiser points out that the heart, i.e., the mind, or inner nature, of a wise man is ever ready to protect him from numerous dangers. Ecclesiastes 10:2, on his right hand. As 18th century commentator Ginsberg noted, to be on one's right was to defend or be ready to assist one, as in Psalm 16:8, Psalm 121 5 inches. P. 106. The Tyndale commentary further explains in its note on Ecclesiastes 10:2, the right hand was associated with a strength which saves, supports and protects. P. Psalm 16:8, Isaiah 41:13. In the latter reference here, God holding one's right hand equates to helping. The right hand was the place of blessing and honor. Compare the blessing on Ephraim in Genesis 48:13-20, and of authority, as with Jesus beside the Father in Colossians 3:1. The left denoted what was less favored, and sometimes even disfavored. Compare the sheep and the goats in Matthew 25:33, Matthew 25:41. What this all shows is that the heart of the wise is focused on and leans toward what is more important and better, while the foolish person's heart is set on that which is less worthwhile. In the first part of Ecclesiastes 10:3, a fool lacking wisdom as he walks along the way is usually taken to mean as he walks down the street, possibly meaning that the fool is foolish even when doing the simplest of things. See the later discussion of verse 15. But walking is also a common metaphor for how one lives, one's way of life, and way can refer to the course of one's life or what he experiences. In the latter part of the verse, the fool, by a literal reading, says to everyone that he is a fool, which could mean that the fool tells everyone else that they are fools. But it probably means that he communicates to or shows everyone, as in the NKJV, that he himself is a fool. Compare this with the latter part of Proverbs 13:16, where a fool lays open or flaunts or exposes his folly, see NKJV, ESV, NIV, or Proverbs 12:23, the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. The contemporary English version paraphrases Ecclesiastes 10:3 this way, fools show their stupidity by the way they live, it's easy to see they have no sense. Stupidity is used here to denote not lack of intelligence, but lack of wisdom in evaluating matters and then making poor life choices. So again we see that wisdom will help us to better navigate this life despite its inability to deal with all of this life's problems. Here we read the second part of the second subsection of the last major section of the book. It starts with Ecclesiastes 10:4 giving counsel on choosing the right course for those in a particular difficult situation, of dealing with a ruler or one in authority becoming upset with them. Recall that Ecclesiastes 8:2-9 concern not running afoul of government. Ecclesiastes 10:4 now concerns what to do when there is some point of offense. We should also note a warning at the end of the chapter about exercising great caution to not offend authorities. Verse 20. It seems that these verses form the brackets of an inclusio, especially given that there are other verses about problems with human government between them. While there are some verses in this segment of the subsection, that is, in verses 4-20, that do not seem exclusive to that topic, they could still apply to it. Thus these verses constitute our current reading. Regarding the upset ruler here in verse 4, who is perhaps flying off the handle, it's important to maintain composure and, if in the ruler's service, not desert one's post, and to be careful in responding, recognizing that conciliation pacifies great offenses. Same verse. Proverbs 16:14 gives us a parallel, as messengers of death is the king's wrath, but a wise man will appease it. And Proverbs 15:1 tells us that a soft answer turns away wrath. As noted earlier in regard to Ecclesiastes 8:3 about not being hasty to go from the ruler's presence, those who are distraught or incensed at the way they are being treated should not just storm off. And the book earlier warned against being quick to get angry is foolish, Ecclesiastes 7:9. Derek Kidner writes in the message of Ecclesiastes regarding 10-4, what we are invited to notice is that rather absurd human phenomenon, the huff, if one can recognize its symptoms, one will be saved some self-inflicted damage, for while it may feel magnificent to resign your post, NEB, ostensibly on principle but actually in a fit of pride, it is in fact less impressive, more immature, then it feels. To be submissive to an autocratic master is not only the believer's duty, as the New Testament has taught us, I Petr, 2:18ff, but may also be his wisdom, since the anger that can be mollified by deference, Ecclesiastes 10:4b, has itself the symptoms of a huff, and one person in that state is better than two, p. 90. As 1 Peter 2:18-19, cited here, says, "Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. For this is commendable, if because of conscience toward God one endures grief, suffering wrongfully." Of course, maybe the person the ruler comes down on is in the wrong to start with, at least in some way. Note again that Ecclesiastes 10:4 mentions pacifying great offenses, though perhaps this means pacifying even great offenses, so that the counsel applies whether one is at fault or not. Expositor states, "We should rather take an objective look at ourselves, and maybe we will find that we should apologize. Unwise people, however, lose their temper and suffer accordingly," right? Note on verse 4, "Even if we are in the right and are suffering injustice, remember that Jesus said, 'Blessed are the peacemakers,' Matthew 5:9, and he urged being compliant in cases of maltreatment by authorities, to turn the other cheek," see verse 39. Paul echoed, "If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men," Romans 12:18. This is not to say there would not come a point to necessarily flee the situation. Ecclesiastes 8:3 said not to be hasty to go. It did not say to never go. One must be prudent and cautious. Consider Solomon's father David with Saul. David stayed until it was no longer safe. The words of Ecclesiastes 10:4 are good counsel not just for the courtiers of a king, but for all of us in dealing with various relationships, with civil authority, with a boss at work, with parents, with one's spouse. This does not mean that we should tolerate serious abuse, but if someone gets angry with us, even unjustly, it's best not to cut loose. It's better to stay calm, remaining committed to the relationship unless it becomes an unbearable situation, though of course that could happen rather quickly depending on the circumstances. Again, wisdom is valuable in helping us to avoid some problems in this life and to keep from making some problems worse. Solomon next interjects within his series of Proverbs a relevant observation about a failing he's witnessed in human governance, verses 5 to 7. Clearly those at the top are not always right, and people are often not where they should be in regard to their appropriate station, whether in government or life generally. We see here rulers exalting foolish people while the nobles or the rich and princes, referring to those more suited by upbringing and training and experience for responsibility, are passed by, verses 5 to 6. Only dignitaries rode on horses, and yet here we see servants or slaves in this role, with princes walking on the ground as menials, verse 7. This is a picture of society turned upside down, not in the sense of societal justice, with rulers and aristocrats getting just deserts for abuses of power, but in a bad way of unqualified people being promoted while qualified people are rejected or ignored. Recognizing the propriety of princes serving in high positions is not an argument for nepotism, exalting people mainly because they are family or friends, as that can result in the very problem lamented of those in leadership positions being out of their depth or even bad people. Rather, as the New American Commentary, Garrett, notes about verses 6 to 7, fools/slaves and rich/princes describe not actual social status, cf. 9:13-16, but moral character. The fools and slaves are those unworthy of advancement, and the rich and princes are people of noble character, and who, we should add, are capable of what is required. Consider Luke 12:21 about being rich toward God, and that the word noble can also mean virtuous. Solomon's father David was a great king though he did not come from royalty, yet he did end up with much military and court experience before assuming the throne, and he was a man who followed God. It's worth pointing out that certain Egyptian texts present the exaltation of unworthy characters as a sign that society is falling apart. The NIV Cultural Background Study Bible relates, as Ecclesiastes complains of slaves on horseback, So the complaints of Cacheparison declares, he who used to give commands is, now, one to whom commands are given. The admonitions of Ipu Ver similarly complains, indeed, princes are hungry and perish, servants are served. These Egyptian texts are not in all respects the same as Ecclesiastes. They tend to focus on the general lawlessness in society during times of political instability in Egypt, whereas Ecclesiastes is concerned more universally with the absurdities of human life. Still, both reflect a common way of describing a world gone wrong, or in disarray, note on Ecclesiastes 10:7. Moving on to the next segment, how exactly the Proverbs of verses 8 to 15 are meant to fit in context is not completely clear. We can see that verses 16 to 17, which follow these, return to the folly in verses 5 to 7 of having the wrong people in positions of responsibility. So verses 8 to 15, in between, may have been placed here to further highlight why this ineptness is a problem. That wisdom, with the strategies and cautions it provides, is required in various endeavors that leaders need to engage in, and thus having unwise people in managerial roles is dangerous and inefficient. Or perhaps these intervening verses concern how we as individuals react to the inequity of inappropriate leadership, pointing out that we ourselves need to be very careful, not doing things that would add to our difficulties or bring us harm. Fitting with the inclusio theme beginning in verse 4 and ending in verse 20 about dealing cautiously with rulers. Either way, there needs to be an awareness of risks. And beyond the enclosing verses about leadership problems, verses 8 to 15 also appear to illustrate the main subject of the current subsection of the book, living boldly with wisdom and diligence. Even though life is risky, we shouldn't let that stop us from living. But we should be wary and take precautions. Some commentators take the digging of a pit and breaking through a wall in verse 8 as doing something against other people, laying a trap or breaking into a home or establishment, and having this backfire, falling into the pit or getting bitten by a snake. That is the sense in what David wrote in Psalm 7. Behold, the wicked brings forth iniquity. Yes, he conceives trouble and brings forth falsehood. He made a pit and dug it out, and has fallen into the ditch which he made. His trouble shall return upon his own head, and his violent dealing shall come down on his crown. Verses 14 to 16. Compare Ecclesiastes 9:15, Ecclesiastes 35:7. We see an even closer parallel to Ecclesiastes 10:8 in Proverbs 26:27. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. This is likewise often taken to refer to acting against others. However, other commentators understand Ecclesiastes 10:8 in the context of verse 9, which points out the danger of different kinds of labor generally, here giving examples involving stones and wood. The word typically translated quarrying in verse 9 could indeed mean quarrying, although it might mean merely uprooting or removing, as a farmer clearing stones from his field, and injuries could result from that as well as from quarrying work. NIV Cultural Background Study Bible, note on verse 9. It's possible that the rolling of a stone in Proverbs 26:27 is also associated with quarrying or removing stones, though the reference there seems to be an act against others. Still other commentators see both ideas in Ecclesiastes 10:8-9, that acts against others can backfire, verse 8, and regular work can be dangerous, verse 9. The New American Commentary states, verse 8 draws on the familiar axiom that those who plot evil against others often have their plans backfire on them. But verse 9 throws in a dash of hard realism. Even those who are engaged in legitimate activity, such as quarrying or woodcutting, can be hurt in the process. The significance is that those who try to serve fairly and justly may see their efforts blow up in their faces. Note on verses 8 to 11. This might seem a bit disjointed, But remember that the verses here are a series of poetic proverbs that could stand alone, placed together but without any narrative explanation. We should also note again that verses 8 to 9 could apply to those in leadership positions, with verse 8 possibly pointing to warfare measures against enemies and verse 9 referring to major building projects. In that case, the idea would seem to be that prudent leaders are needed, and the fact that capable and careful people are not in places in leadership will spell disaster, as described here. On the other hand, these verses could apply to anyone trying to act against others, perhaps reacting to the problem leadership situation, or conducting normal, everyday labor, in which case the point would be that whatever is done involves risks, so we all have to use wisdom and be cautious. In verse 10 we see the need for wisdom in working smarter, not just harder, which is necessary for leaders in directing the work of others, and for all of us individually in whatever it is we need to accomplish. Included in this is taking proper precautions against the dangers of the previous verses. If an iron implement is supposed to be sharp but is blunt, it's going to take a lot more work to use it. The implement here is not necessarily an axe, as in the NKJV. The Hebrew word here just means iron, as in the earlier King James Version. It's often thought to refer to an axe here because the previous verse mentions splitting wood. But, as already pointed out, these are a series of possibly standalone proverbs that have been placed together. The iron implement in verse 10 may not involve chopping wood and could just as well be a sword, chisel, saw, scythe or something else. The easy-to-read version says the problem is trying to cut with a dull knife. The voice translation is less specific. If a tool is dull and no one sharpens its edge, the work will be harder. Failure to use wisdom in using blunted tools results in wasted effort, and exertion toward exhausting one's own strength. Part of the problem here is not realizing what is most needed or valuable for the task at hand, in this case a sharpened implement. The problem also seems to involve failing to check to see if what is to be used is in the condition it needs to be in, not enough due assessment of the situation and of the means for tackling it. And yet another part of the problem would seem to involve being too hasty in acting, failing to take the needed time to prepare for the task, in this case, sharpening the tool. To paraphrase Benjamin Franklin, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. As the verse concludes, properly exercising wisdom is profitable for succeeding in an endeavor, and that includes helping to manage risks such as those mentioned in the preceding verses. Verse 11 has been interpreted in quite different ways. A literal rendering would be something like, if the snake bites without whispering, or being charmed, there's no profit for a master of the tongue. Compare Young's literal translation, Green's literal translation and Interlinear, Strong's and Brown Driver Briggs lexicons. The master of the tongue here is often taken to be the one whispering, a snake charmer. The NIV renders this as, if a snake bites before it is charmed, the charmer receives no fee, that is, he doesn't get paid. Yet profit could be meant more generally, as to merely say there is no benefit or it does no good to have a snake charmer if he doesn't charm the snake before it strikes, as in other versions. This is thought to illustrate the danger of acting too slowly, in contrast to the opposite problem in verse 10 of acting too quickly without preparing. We have today the expression he who hesitates is lost. Just so, here would be someone who has taken the time to prepare and learning the skill of snake charming but doesn't use it when needed. It should be noted that this is not speaking of mystical enchantment but a method of holding a snake's focus, mostly through movements. The Preaching the Word commentary follows this interpretation, stating, taken together, verses 10 to 11 show us why we need wisdom from God. Sometimes it is important to take more time to prepare. Other times we need to act before it is too late. Wisdom comes in knowing the difference. Ovid, the famous Roman poet, is reported to have said, At times it is folly to hasten, at other times, to delay. The wise do everything in its proper time. Riken, p. 239. And Ecclesiastes 10, part 1 of 2.